All right, welcome, Sean. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this is Sean Dingworth, and he is the executive director of Richmond Art Museum and has been for how long?
I've been there 20 years.
20 years.
In some capacity.
Good Lord, that's awesome. Okay, so let's start off by telling us about your childhood, where you were
born. Sure, well, I was born in Fountain City. Okay. I went to Northeastern High School. My family has really deep roots in Wayne County. They were the first 10 settlers in Wayne County, came here in 1807, part of the Quaker migration from North Carolina to move to Indiana, many of which were farmers. Ephraim Overman, who came to Richmond, ended up being elected to the first state legislature in 1816.
So that was your, how many grades?
I think five.
Five grades. Okay. So you can trace your heritage all the way back there.
Yeah, I have the Overmans trace back to 1677, coming
okay.
from England to Connecticut.
Is that from your mom's side?
It is from my mother's
okay.
side. On my mom's side, both my maternal and paternal parents came to Wayne County very early. Both were Quakers. And so I tend to be related to a lot of people who live here.
Is everyone your cousin?
Pretty much. You know, when I did the Richmond Group book, mm-hmm. I discovered after the fact that I was related to five of the Richmond Group artists.
Oh my gosh.
John Elwood Bundy.
No way.
And that's really because of having family here so early and those Quaker roots. And obviously, Quakers were encouraged to marry other Quakers.
Right, right. Yeah. So what was it like growing up in Fountain City?
Well, I think it was great. In some ways, it was lonely. I think I always yearned to be somewhere where there was more activity.
Mm-hmm.
But the Friends meeting was a big influence, I think, on me. It was a place where I was encouraged. It was where I did my first public speaking. And no matter how horrible I was, they encouraged me. It was a place where I met very strong women who I really admired. And, you know, through the faith, we were taught about equality and love and peace. And I think those are things that have stayed with me forever. And so I've come to appreciate that quietness,
mm-hmm.
not only in the meeting, but where I lived on a farm,
mm-hmm.
Which... as a young child, felt like I was way, way, way out there, even though we were only 9 miles from
mm-hmm.
Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Middle Road.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt literally I was in the middle of nowhere. So.
Did you have other farm kids that were friends?
Sure, yeah, we did. But, you know,
yeah.
it wasn't always so easy to get together. I
right.
mean, you'd get on your bike or you'd walk. You know, we did interact. My family was very, very social, which I think helped me. When I tell people when I was young I was incredibly shy and didn't speak, they find that really hard to believe.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I took those years to really observe. I was very observant. And I think that quietness and not so much activity really played into my creativity because
mm-hmm.
to have fun, I had to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
So I took what was around me. I can remember we had a small creek that ran through our farm, and after a large storm, there had been sort of created a little island. And so my brother and I, you know, pretended this was our island.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think we had to, you know, use our imagination, and I think that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I've ended up in a creative field. Because I had to be creative as a child.
Other than nature giving you kind of the
mm-hmm.
a place to display that, was your family nature oriented? Were they environmental oriented because they were farmers or what?
Yeah, to some degree, although they all still worked in factories around the area,
mm-hmm.
Which I think was something that then with the Richmond Group Art Colony, I sort of understood that because all of those artists, even though they were creative, had to have day jobs.
Yeah, right.
And many of them worked in the factories. And I think that was a reoccurring theme around here. Most of my friends' parents worked for a factory. You either worked for Reed or you worked for a factory.
Really? Interesting.
In the community. And many of our friends chose to live in Fountain City, I think because it was just quieter, a smaller school, so we had a little more attention paid to us. But from the arts, my mother was also an artist that she practiced kind of as a hobby.
What type of art?
Well, she liked to paint, you know, landscapes, still lifes, oil painting. But my grandfather was a painter for Wayne Works and Union City Body Company. And then in the evening, he restored historic cars. So he had about 30 antique cars, including Model A's.
Oh my gosh.
And he could paint a pinstripe on an automobile, just the straightest line. And I used to love watching that. He could also draw cartoons, and Popeye was his favorite to draw. So I think there was kind of that interest that we all shared. And because I was born during the Vietnam War, my father was away at Vietnam when I was young. And so, actually, my parents lived in town in Fountain City, but because my father was away, her parents encouraged her to move out to their farm, and so we did. And I think I really bonded more with my grandfather than I did my father.
Was your father artistic in any way?
No, he was more mathematical. In fact, there was an article in the paper where at the time when he was in high school, he could outcompute the computers.
No way.
Mathematics. And he had a huge desire to go to college, but he grew up in a family that, you know, worked in a factory. And they felt when you turned 18, that was, you know, you moved on and you, so they didn't encourage him to go to college. So it really became important to both of my parents that at least my brother and I had the opportunity to pursue that if we wanted. Now, what he had was a love of history. And I think that I got from him. And so a lot of our family vacations were going to see historic sites, you know, going to Williamsburg, that sort of thing. So kind of my mom's artistic and creative eye and my father's historic interests sort of merged into where my interests tend to lie today.
Right. So what pushed you into, well, first of all, what made you stay in the area once you turned 18?
I did not want to stay. And being Quaker, my family really were pushing Earlham College.
Imagine that.
And I felt like I had gone to a small school. I knew that I needed to push myself. I had seen plenty of people, if you don't push yourself, you stay where you're at.
Right.
And not that that's bad. I think if people make a conscious decision, but getting back to that original thought, I always knew I was different than people around me. I didn't know what that was at that time, but I knew I had to explore other options. I did have the opportunity to go to France when I was 16. That really opened my eyes. And so I was determined to go to a larger college, a larger university. I did have family that worked, that owned a finance business, and they had told me I wanted to study art. I didn't know what. I was sort of interested in landscape design. I was possibly architecture. Something within the arts I wanted to do. And my family said, you know, we will absolutely pay for you to go to college, but not to study the arts.
Really?
Yeah. And so my cousin, who owned this financial firm in Atlanta and Tampa and was about to expand into California, which California sounded very exciting to me, said, Sean, go to IU, get a business degree, and I'll hire you. Well, you know, not many kids at that time period really had job offers or opportunities.
Right.
So that's what I did. So I went to IU, which I loved. I loved the campus. I had sort of a big city feel in that I was meeting people from all over the world.
Yeah.
It was the most diverse place I had been at that point in my life. People different, people that were like me. I was, you know, finding myself around other people who were like me. Absolutely loved my experience at IU. But then at the end of my sophomore year, my cousin unfortunately died of heart disease. and at the age of 45, which was a shock to everyone. And so the company was eventually sold, and I had to think of a different route. Mm-hmm. So I did end up graduating with a degree in finance and a minor in economics, but all my electives were art.
Really?
Anytime I could take art, I took art. Uh-huh. So whether that was actual art instruction or art appreciation, I loved art appreciation, I would do that.
Were the teachers there significant in a way to you, just because they were...
You know, I didn't have any teachers that were significant, but what I did do was, instead of the business school, after my sophomore year, I transferred to the School of Public and Environmental Affairs, mm-hmm. which was a better match for me, because mm-hmm. we talked about policy. The other thing, my father was always interested in politics, and I was always interested in that as well. Mm-hmm. And so the School of Public and Environmental Affairs seemed to offer me the opportunity to have a business degree, but yet opportunities to work, whether it be with the government. Initially, I thought I wanted to work with the General Accounting Office, because they examine where federal dollars are spent. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I knew I didn't want to do growing up with a bunch of people who worked in a factory, and again, I'm not belittling that in any way. Mm-hmm. It provided huge opportunities for me. Mm-hmm. But what I knew I couldn't do as an individual was do the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. And so that was a job that they would be investigating different areas, different agencies. So I knew it would always be evolving and changing. So I knew I needed to do something that kept my interest going.
It's interesting that there are several people that I've interviewed that are very creative and mm-hmm. known as artists in the area, all have finance backgrounds. A lot of them have kind of a numbers
That's
background, which in... You know, you wouldn't ever think that. There's such a kind of a cliche that
sure.
artists don't understand money, and, you know, finance people
right.
don't understand art. And there's
right.
it's certainly not that way.
Well, I think it's one thing in my life. The creative aspect's fun, but there isn't always a definitive answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in finance, there is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, my current job, I do some of the financial work. And I enjoy it because you either balance or you don't balance.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to balance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some relief in that, because mm-hmm. the rest of my job is pretty open-ended. And so I think it's sort of that thing to always fall back on.
Yeah.
For me.
That's funny. You've been at the Art Museum, as you said, in some capacity for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So what? How did you make your... How did you get your foot in the door?
So, when I came back, again, I had no intentions of really staying here. So I graduated, came back to Richmond. The job market was, you know, it was high unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
It was difficult.
Year was that you came back?
That would have been 89.
89.
And I did look at the GRE, and I was studying for that. Do I go on to graduate school? And I found that I felt I really needed experience. I mean, my parents were great. They said, you have the rest of your life to work. We're not going to make you have a high school job. I did work in the summers during college. I worked at Friends Fellowship,
mm-hmm.
which I think probably had some influence in keeping me here, because that was such a family network. And
mm-hmm.
it was a great opportunity for me to learn the names of Richmond
mm-hmm.
and the connections, who owned what business or what factory or what, you know, again, part of this interest in history and genealogy, making those connections. And again, it felt back to sort of my days at the meeting
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it was a higher population of women who
mm-hmm.
lived there,
mm-hmm.
Who were successful. Many were school teachers and living in this higher end retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how have they been able to do this?
Mm-hmm.
But they were just the kindest people. I tell a story of two sisters who lived there, who loved IU. And
mm-hmm.
of course, they were always envious of me going to the IU basketball game. So
mm-hmm.
in the summer, I would share my stories. And after they both had passed, I called out at Friends Fellowship. I knew they had no relatives. And the one sister, Dorothy, was a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them at Friends, I said, is there any way I could just get a picture of them?
Mm-hmm.
And the head of the housekeeping went to her room, and she called me back, and she said, Sean, the only thing the auctioneers left was the Bible. You
mm-hmm.
could have the Bible if you want the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, let me come out and look at it. Mm-hmm. So I went out. We opened the Bible. In the Bible was a picture of me.
No way.
With Dorothy and her sister.
No way. Yeah. That's awesome.
So it was kind of meant.
Yeah.
Meant
That's
to be.
That's amazing. Oh, cool.
So I came back from college. I went through a headhunter in Ohio, again, my intent of not staying in Indiana, and I went, and I was offered a job at Woolworth in Richmond, and the salary was terrific, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I could live at home for 6 months, a year, save up significantly, and then move on.
Right.
And that led into a 3-year career. Mm-hmm. And then we closed. And I took the risk of opening my own men's clothing store.
What?
Yeah. So I had...
I have no idea.
A store called Knots and Bows. It was at the old Richmond Court.
I remember Knots and Bows.
So, it was all female business owners except me, which I found interesting and challenging. Mm-hmm. They had a flower shop, an incredible cafe. The women's shop was very popular. Card shop, gift shop, children's shop. They have everything but a men's shop. And so I opened that up and was successful with that for a number of years. And then that's when I was asked to be on the Richmond Art Museum board.
Okay.
And got real involved with the board. I got involved with the collection. And again, getting back to my roots of enjoying art appreciation, they can remember me coming to the museum when I was 17, 18, checking out books. And that came because my grandmother used to go to auctions all the time. She started taking me at auctions when I was 5 years old. And I started noticing these paintings at these farm auctions would go for huge sums of money. And I thought, what is that? What is the interest? Or Overbeck figurines, you know, bringing hundreds of dollars.
What did you think of Overbeck figurines when you
were
that
found
age?
It just totally fascinating.
Yeah.
I wanted to know more about the artist. And I think sometimes with art, that's what happens to me. I might really appreciate the piece, but then sometimes I want to know who created this. Because I really admire creative people. And I just thought, you know, they were childlike in some ways. They were colorful. They were strange. They were different. And I wanted to know the people. And I think that's one of the challenges as a curator, and especially of curating artists of the past, is there isn't a lot of information about who the artists were other than their art. Their art speaks for them. And so after being on the board for a couple of years, the director at the time announced that they were moving on to another position, so I was asked to be interim director, and I did, and closed my shop, thoroughly enjoyed what I was doing, and then they did have an applicant from New York, and so they interviewed both of us. They hired her as the executive director, and they hired me as director of operations. And so I served in that capacity for almost 4 years, and then served again as interim director once she left, and then interviewed for the executive director's position, which I then...
So when was that? What year was that?
That would have been 2002.
Okay. Great.
So I started in 1998. The nice thing is my anniversary sort of coincides with the museum's anniversary because I started during our 100th year.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that's
so
cool.
This June will be our 120th, and it'll be my 20th year as well.
So you've, over that time, done just... a million things. I mean, I that art museum has just blossomed and has become such an incredible part of our community. And there's, it is it the only art museum connected to a high school?
Well, what
or?
We say, we certainly know there are private schools that have art galleries.
Right.
And there actually is a school in Peru, Indiana that has an art collection. And they now have some regular hours with that collection. But what we've always said was, to our knowledge, we were the only known public art museum in which a public museum is housed within that it's active.
And then a public school. Mm-hmm.
And probably with our history, you know, of 120 years, I don't think there's anything even private that would rival that.
Yeah.
So it was a concept that our first director actually traveled the United States and spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
She had a phrase. She would say, if we can teach children about war, we can teach children about beauty.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And this community's desire for culture is why that institution was formed so early. Also, the fact that we had an art colony. This was a very progressive community. This mm-hmm. is a place of a huge number of inventions, creative people, you know, thriving industry, thriving business. And those people gave back. And mm-hmm. I think it's why we have the infrastructure we have. Mm-hmm. It's why we have the green space we have. It's why we have the organizations and the museums that we have today. Mm-hmm. And it was important to them that the kids of the community have access to the arts. Richmond High School is the birthplace of the first high school orchestra in America, and then also to have the art museum. And there's still a relationship today with the Richmond community, Richmond Symphony Orchestra, and the Civic Hall Associates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a unique partnership that other schools don't have.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the students there recognize how unique it is.
Yes and no. Generally, most do not. Mm-hmm. What I find is when they come back or they've lived somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to recall the student's name, but someone came back and said, you know, I really never appreciated the quality of art mm-hmm. that you had until I went to the Art Institute of Chicago and realized you have a better William Merritt Chase than they do.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, again, it's why that exposure is important. They may not, it may not be completely soaking in,
mm-hmm.
But I think to have the access versus not having the access mm-hmm. is so important.
And I think probably, I imagine you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the quality of high school art teachers we have too is
right.
probably partially because that art museum
sure.
has fostered that.
Absolutely.
Right?
At one time, I was told, and this is well before my tenure,
mm-hmm.
anyone who graduated from Richmond High School with a major in art had automatic acceptance into the Chicago Art Institute.
No kidding. Wow.
So going back even to the early 1900s, they mm-hmm. had extraordinary teachers
mm-hmm.
That really, and most of them women,
mm-hmm.
That really influenced, I think, the artists in this community and the
yeah.
art movement. That was the other thing was I found when I got involved with the museum was the Association of Quakers in Art. And nationally, there aren't a lot of recognized Quaker artists, nor were Quakers encouragers of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
But in this community, they were.
Interesting.
So our first director, Mrs. Elibon Johnson, but by the way, we are cousins. So getting back.
Obviously.
yeah. So getting back to that, I'm related to everyone. I have a dear friend who jokingly says, you know, anyone I mention, she says, now are they a cousin? So
it's a cool thing, though.
But she was a Quaker,
mm-hmm.
and many of the Richmond Group artists were Quakers. And so you see that kind of running through, and so I feel a kinship with that and a passion and you know, and I always wanted to write the book about the Richmond Group. I
mm-hmm.
felt it was a story. I think I understand that Quaker sensibility of being humble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so important. But I also think in today's environment that you need to celebrate those things that are good and positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we celebrate those things. And I think that's why the Richmond Group, although recognized early on during their lifetime as an integral part of not only the Indiana art movement, but really the art movement nationally,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of just not been talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to tell their story.
So how unique was the Richmond Group in the world of art?
It was unique in the sense that they really became accomplished artists with very little training, academic training.
Okay.
And, you know, we know within the Hoosier Group that those artists went on to Munich or to Paris and achieved great academic training. Mm-hmm. And the Richmond group, like I said, these were hardworking factory workers. Mm-hmm. These were skilled trades, really. Mm-hmm. And then in their free time, they were painting landscape paintings or still lives or portraits. And to have that desire to continually get better, but not have the ability to either afford academic training or to be able to leave their family to seek academic training, I think made them unusual. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they love the nature and the nature around here. I mean, mm-hmm. Richmond's a beautiful community. I mean, it was settled here because of the natural beauty, because of mm-hmm. the Whitewater Gorge and the Whitewater River. And this became a main source of their subject matter.
Mm-hmm. How do you think we can capitalize on that better than we do?
Well, I think we need, more people need to be aware of it. I think it's difficult for people to really delve into what's around them all the time. People don't see it. I tell this story. I was asked by our superintendent, Dr. Boroff, to do an inventory of all the art in the schools. Mm-hmm. And I went to one of the middle schools, and I was finding most of the art in the library or in the administrative rooms or the break rooms. Mm-hmm. And I asked the custodian to let me into the library. It was mm-hmm. locked. And the custodian said, "Well, there's nothing in there." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I believe you, but I'm here to check." Mm-hmm. He opened the door, turned on the lights, and there was this enormous John Elwood Bundy.
Oh, really?
And he said, "I had never noticed it."
Funny.
So, you know, what I like to do is, because not everybody enjoys history, I think it's important we understand our history. And I love to take something historical, but then make it relevant to today. Mm-hmm. And one of the examples of the Art Museum of that would be the Fantascope High School Film Festival. Mm-hmm. C. Francis Jenkins, mm-hmm. Who invented the motion picture device, the Fantascope, which projected the first large image of film, was, you know, created by someone from here. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to create a venue and an opportunity for high school students to show their film. Certainly with YouTube, the internet, social media, they can show their films. Mm-hmm. But what we offer is an audience response. Mm-hmm. They may get a thumbs up, a thumbs down, they may get a positive comment on mm-hmm. social media. But for people to laugh mm-hmm. where you intended them to laugh, or to gasp where you intended mm-hmm. them to gasp. So it was important for me to say why we're showing film in Richmond, because we have a history of someone who was integral in the development of film mm-hmm. and television. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm also related to him.
I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. That, it also has got to be cool, because now everything is on a tiny screen. You see everything right. on a tiny screen. So for them to see something just projected that big yeah. must be amazing.
And it's why going to museums is so important, mm-hmm. Or going to the theater to see a film. I, mm-hmm. you know, to some degree, people don't go in the numbers that they used to because mm-hmm. it's available, but you cannot replace that experience.
No, you can't.
Yeah. By going yeah. and seeing.
I feel like as an environmentalist too, things like Rick Wilson's exhibit, yeah. I think also make people stop and remember that this is what our world looks like. And
exactly.
if you take the time to slow down, I think art does a beautiful job of that. Certainly Rick did a beautiful job of that. I was reminded
yeah.
of all kinds of parks
yeah,
I hadn't been
exactly.
to and I need to. Yeah. What do you feel like it does that for Richmond in some way too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, there's people who don't live in Wayne County who have a great appreciation for the Richmond art movement mm-hmm. and the nature that we have. And I think that's our future. As every town assimilates, every town has a cinder block Walmart, a cinder block CVS, mm-hmm. You know, more and more of these larger corporations or buying off of Amazon. I think the future is tourism. I think the future is exploring the space not only around you but nearby you mm-hmm. And seeing these unique offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so much in Wayne County.
We do. Yeah,
and
we do.
And a lot of that foundation was started early. And then there's mm-hmm. there's new you know things that have been created more recently, like Cope.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope that more people start exploring those mm-hmm. things. I mean, I think getting the word out is always the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you do a good job when you are inviting shows to be a part of the art museum to oftentimes pick a lot of things that highlight our assets.
Right.
You know, the things like Rick Wilson, the things like the concrete, that was a cool exhibit too.
Yeah.
And that was a Cincinnati exhibit. But just to kind of make people take a look at their home.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, we can't just hang art on the wall and expect people to come.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be an experience. And we find ways, you know, we've even done paranormal investigations at the museum.
Oh, have you?
We've done, I went to school with David Mullins, whose brother Rich Mullins was a well-known Christian country music writer and
mm-hmm.
wrote for Amy Grant. And
mm-hmm.
film was made about Rich. And when I learned that, I contacted David immediately and said, how can we do a screening here?
Mm-hmm.
And we could have kept that as a Richmond Art Museum fundraiser, but I joined up with Genesis Women's Shelter,
mm-hmm.
and we split the proceeds. I'm a huge advocate of partnerships
mm-hmm.
and collaborations. I think all of us bringing our different audiences together, in a lot of ways we share the same art or the same audience because it is a small community,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of people in our community that we don't reach.
Yeah, right.
And so if we can pull in different groups, I think we all benefit from
mm-hmm.
that. And again, showing a film by someone local who was creative and artistic
mm-hmm.
completely fit into our mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to help the Genesis Shelter
mm-hmm.
just felt great.
Mm-hmm.
And we packed the house. We sold out 500 seats.
That's awesome. I feel like you have always been very good about that partnership piece.
Yeah.
And even if there are partnerships where you know you're going to have to do most of the work.
Right.
Or a partnership where you know that
Which happens.
Yeah, which happens. I mean, staffs are different. And
yeah.
A lot of people don't have the resources to be able
exactly.
to pour into it.
Play it to each group's strengths.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And I think that I learned very early on
Who'd
in
you
my
learn that
childhood.
From?
Well, yeah, I think in some sense, you know, my faith, reaching out to different people, you know, who maybe you wouldn't normally do. And as a child, you know, I faced bullying and I faced some difficult times, but I always found myself being friends with different groups.
Mm-hmm.
I could be friends with jocks, but I could also be friends with the geeks or people who were made fun of. I always had compassion for people who were different.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You do seem still to have such a diverse group
mm-hmm.
that surrounds you all the time. And,
yeah.
And you tend to not go into any space and not know people, too. They're probably all your cousins.
Well, I hope not. But I do, I think for me, again, it gets back to that. I love learning from other people, and I love hearing about other people's experiences. And I think everyone is important, and everyone has a story. Everyone has a path. And I love hearing about that or learning about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love learning from other people. I feel like I'm constantly learning.
Mm-hmm.
And the more diverse ideas and diverse opinions,
mm-hmm.
I think that's one of my greatest fears being in an organization so long is,
mm-hmm.
am I still challenging that organization? Are we still bringing enough new ideas to
mm-hmm.
keep it growing?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you think other organizations what other organizations, I guess, I'm asking, have you learned from and echoed in that way?
Oh, that's a really great question. Well, I think it's for me sometimes is finding different audiences. So, for example, our new partnership with IU East
mm-hmm.
and arts education and how that's grown and there's so many opportunities in this community. When we started talking about the partnership, I thought, well, how do we relate?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're two organizations that no matter what your age is, there's an opportunity to either experience art through galleries, openings, meeting artists, or to take classes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an educational component. And I think when we first announced that, some people thought, well, what is it that you have in common? Mm-hmm. And so we try to find that commonality. But obviously, IU East, what they're bringing for us is a younger audience, which mm-hmm. we desperately need.
Mm-hmm. Does that worry you that art appreciation is
yeah.
growing older? And
yeah, well, you know, the situation with public education, mm-hmm. They're now a competing business mm-hmm. at some level. They're having to do marketing. They're doing, you know, in my days, schools didn't have to do a billboard to get a student. A
yeah,
student has
right.
a, you know, our state has defined students as a dollar value mm-hmm. to administrations and to school boards. So they're more concerned with getting students versus, in my opinion, a quality education.
Mm-hmm.
And education has been narrowed to those few subjects. Everyone mm-hmm. says get back to the three R's, and it's you can learn the three R's through arts. I
mm-hmm.
mean, arts, you know, teach creative thinking skills, which is what people need for the jobs of the future.
Right, right.
You know, we're not thinking about what those future jobs are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our supporters who are business leaders understand that fully, and
mm-hmm.
that's why they support the arts.
Yeah.
And
do you get frustrated by those statistics that constantly tell us
yeah.
that the arts and outdoor education and all of these things are essential for a kid's development, but they're the first things cut? You can't
yeah.
get it through somebody's head, can't
no,
you?
No.
It's very difficult.
They don't
yeah.
listen at all. And
yeah.
and that's because government's gotten involved, I think,
mm-hmm.
with education and dictating. And
mm-hmm.
these are people who don't have the background and don't understand. You know, one of the reasons I took an academic route in high school, but I minored in art,
mm-hmm.
and art was my salvation. Art was the place where I could rest. I could be creative. There was no right or wrong answer.
Mm-hmm.
There was still a grade, and I knew that, but there was a freedom
mm-hmm.
of being able to express myself the way I wanted to, not what was the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also where I met people who were very different and different
mm-hmm.
thinking, different minded thinking. And so I loved art.
So I have a question for you that I'll be putting you on the spot a little bit. But
okay.
a lot of people go into art museums, especially modern art museums,
mm-hmm.
or they see modern or abstract art.
Sure.
And they say,
I
can do that, or my toddler could do that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say back to them? Because I was an art major as well, and I always struggle with that answer of, well,
sure.
I don't know what was the artist thinking? What does this make you feel like? All
well,
that
really,
kind of stuff. But what do you say?
Well, really, they probably could not. It, you know, and this is the thing. If you could do it, you would be doing it.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot of abstract is very complex. I think doing abstract is much more difficult and being successful with it
mm-hmm.
than painting something realistic. Again, realistic, you can say there's kind of a right or wrong to that,
right?
Right. You know, proportion is right,
mm-hmm.
Perspective is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that tree looks like that tree, or that portrait looks just like that person.
Right.
And in abstract, there's nothing to gauge that with.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big difference between, I think, a toddler's, although I find children art very refreshing because they've not been told all the rules. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the reasons we support young artists
mm-hmm.
and we have the high school art show.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the art sectional because
mm-hmm.
so much is made from athletics, which I was in athletics. I think athletics is important. I think there's important lessons to learn from that. But I also think our creative students should also receive the same kind of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But I've tried abstract. I think it's difficult. And again, I think what's nice about some of those contemporary artworks is it really forces you to think
mm-hmm.
even more deeply than something a little more realistic.
So what question do you ask when somebody looks at a piece like that? I mean, what's your thing to get them to start to be engaged with abstract art?
Well, I love for people to just talk about how something makes them feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think emotion-based is easy, or one-word descriptions. We'll do that with the kids. we'll go around the room and say, give me one word that describes that piece to you.
Mm-hmm.
With the Third Grade Academy, then we'll put those words together and start formulating sentences and mm-hmm. paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
And before long, the group is, you know, describe this painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might, if we know something about the art, if the artist has taken the opportunity to share that, then we'll see how close they came to that artist,
mm-hmm.
and what they felt.
Yeah.
Which is, sometimes they cool. it's exact.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's something they weren't thinking of at all.
Yeah.
And again, that's the critical thinking aspect of it. There's no right or wrong.
Yeah.
I generally will have students go stand by an artwork. I'll say, go stand by the one. If you could take one home today, stand by it, and we're going to go around the room, and you're going to tell us why.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a kid say, I hate art, and I hate everything in here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, awesome. Go stand by the one you hate the most, and we're going to talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, everything we see and use today, someone created.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, I had a young woman say, I think art's stupid. And I noticed she was really dressed kind of impeccably.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you like fashion, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I love fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, someone drew that. Someone thought of that concept. Mm-hmm. Someone drew, you know, that's art.
Mm-hmm.
It is?
Yeah.
Hard for people, it may be a young boy who loves automobiles.
Yeah.
Well, someone designed that automobile.
Yeah.
So I try to take it to that level. And I think the reason the Richmond group and the book sold so well was when I talked to people about those early days in the factories, people around here can relate to that because they worked in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I had a gentleman whose wife was a artist, and he listened to a lecture, and he said, I go with my wife to be supportive, and he said, I don't really like art,
mm-hmm.
but he said, I thoroughly enjoyed your lecture.
Oh, that's yeah. neat. That's really neat. It's that argument is actually such a great argument that we should be making more
yes.
about art. Well, art education is critical because look at everything.
Right.
I mean, that door, your shirt,
that's right.
and
everything.
From your haircut to everything.
Everything.
Is related back to art, and
yeah, that's
and
exactly right.
Somebody creative and somebody
mm-hmm.
had to figure that all out and come up with it. So we should yeah. be using that argument more often.
Absolutely,
I appreciate you for bringing that up because
yeah.
I don't think that way as often as I
yeah.
should.
And in nature.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's you know it was
exactly.
all created.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
It's yeah. It's everywhere. Well, I certainly appreciate what you do. The Art
Thank
Museum
you.
Is just a jewel to have.
Thank you very much.
Your recent accomplishment of going through a building program and staying sane on the other side is also remarkable. So, good job.
Thank you.
But I hope everybody continues to appreciate that Art Museum and what we have because it's truly unique for this community.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Thanks for being
it.
Here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
That was okay.
It was wonderful.